Now, from the heart of America, it's the Eagle 93.9 podcast.
It is Off-Road Friday, the day that we toss out the format map. We've set aside the politics and the worries of the week and delve into some topics that are a little more esoteric, hopefully a little more compelling and interesting, some of the unanswered questions of the human existence. And joining us today is a guy who's done a lot of research and writing on those very topics. He's the publisher of Mysterious World E-Zine. That's an electronic internet magazine, and also the author of Mysterious World Ireland, Doug Elwell. Doug, welcome back to the Eagle 93.9.
Great, thanks for having me back.
One of the issues that you published at Mysterious World some time back dealt with giants in the land.
And, yes, it was about 3 or 4 years ago now, actually.
And
we've been in hiatus for a while, but good.
Well, doing the research and writing for Mysterious World Ireland, which, again, is another whole topic, you know, with all of the legends and mythology that have come out of Ireland. But it's so well done and so well written. I wanted to talk with you about this because it's a topic that shows up in almost every culture around the globe.
Yes, it does.
Stories of giants from, you know, David and Goliath in the Bible to, the stories of the accounts of the Nephilim in the Bible, all the way to Mother Goose fairy tales like Jack the Giant Killer and so forth.
And to modern times. Just today I was going down Route 66 near Chicago in preparation for a series of articles on Route 66. And we met up a couple giants on the way down there. There's actually not real giants, of course. They're giant commercial-type giants, but it was interesting. Along its early history, Route 66 had giants all along its route, and four of those were saved in Illinois, including one called the Jackhammer Giant, which is a mascot for the Joliet Jackhammers, a minor league team, and another one called the Gemini Giant, which is dressed in a spaceman costume. It's now the mascot for a drive-in called the Skylight Drive-In in a small town on Route 66 just south of here. So it's still, even in modern times, giants are still a fascination, definitely.
Sure. You know, Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox, you know, all through history we find accounts and stories of oversized humans. The question that comes to mind then is, on what are these stories based? Is there some basis for these stories in fact?
Well, the Bible talks explicitly about giants, starting in Genesis 6 and repeating on a regular pattern throughout the text. Moses says there were giants in the land and also afterwards. And what he meant was that the giants appeared in the time before the flood when they were known as the Nephilim, which means those who came down, literally, or those who fell down, or perhaps those who were thrown down. An allusion to the throwing down of Azazel and Semyaza and the 200 fallen angels described in the apocryphal book of Enoch. This is the basis of Hebrew cosmology. People don't understand the very important role that the giants and the fallen angels play in Hebrew cosmology. They just kind of skip past that stuff. It's just kind of weird. I don't understand it. So
fables, fairy tales.
It's a fairy tale, or it's Hebrew mythology, or it's mistranslated or something. And in actual fact, it's one of the key themes, if not the key theme, running throughout the Bible, is the battle between Israel and the giants. It's been a constant struggle throughout history, really from Cain and Abel to the present day.
So for people who aren't familiar with the episodes described in Genesis 6 and the Book of Enoch, where did the giants come from?
The giants were the offspring of fallen angels and human women. The fallen angels, there were a group of 200 who came down, as described in the Book of Enoch, led by two powerful fallen angels named Azazel and Semyaza. In my theory, Azazel is the Satan of the Bible, and Semyaza is kind of his second in command. They both struggle for control of the earth, but they also help each other when it's in their best interest, in my demonology that I've developed. And they came down to earth to instruct men in what they consider to be righteousness. And what they did is they gave them what we understand today as science, arts, and, generally speaking, technology, in order to help man live in the world after he had been kicked out of the garden. My theory is that one of the things that Satan enticed Eve was when he said, you can be like God, he's saying, you can use my technology and live on your own. You can use technology to live outside of God's control. So that's where we got the art of medicine, where we can prolong our lives and bring health, education, all the arts and the sciences. Everything was given to us, even writing, by the fallen angels. according to the Book of Enoch, and I think it's correct. Really, anything that is technological, or to use Jocko Lewis' concept of la technique, anything that involves skill is ultimately from these fallen angels, and it comes between us and God. It's part of the rebellion of mankind from God. It's hard for people to swallow, because we're so used to technology and writing, and it's so much part of our life. It never occurred to them that it may have had sinister origins.
Yeah, I mean, we think about education and medicine and technology as good things, beneficial things, things that make life easier, make life more enjoyable, more fulfilling.
They're more like theological band-aids, because Adam and Eve had it perfect in the garden. They had everything they needed. God took care of them. And this is a consistent theme throughout the Bible. God in the wilderness of Sinai said, you know, you don't need the Egyptian food, you don't need the Egyptian technology and the culture and everything, and what they called the flesh pots of Egypt was what we call today the supermarkets. Egypt had, literally, that's what they were. There was like, they had an enormous variety and high-quality food available, because the Nile was extremely fertile region, one of the most fertile in the world. So they had, that plus the fact that they were major trade links with the ancient Near East and possibly South America and even North America, and probably Asia and India and all the rest.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. The diffusionist approach to the ancient world is absolutely the way to go. The isolationist approach sound arrogant, but I think it's the haunt of fools. People who don't want to realize the truth about what actually happened in our culture and have vested interests in keeping it hidden.
Okay, I'm going to remember that word diffusionist, and we'll come back to that as we talk about how these stories have spread around the globe. We're talking to Doug Elwell, the publisher of Mysterious World Easing, that's mysteriousworld.com, about giants on the Eagle 93.9. So the 200 fallen angels came down to Earth to try to take control of it away from God. They seduce Adam and Eve away from following God. The giants then, how do these fallen then procreate with human women?
Some people think they actually modify their bodies to be able to do that. I'm actually of the school that they actually manipulated the human genome and created bodies for themselves, because angels, as Jesus said, neither marry nor are given in marriage. They're like, when Jesus was promoted or confronted by the Pharisees by a theological question intended to trip him up and show him to be a false teacher, he said, they gave him the question, if a woman was married to several husbands, and the man he's not living with now isn't her husband, who will be her husband in heaven? And he answered, don't you understand the scriptures? When people die and go to heaven or are resurrected, it's not clear in that specific teaching. He said they are neither married nor given marriage. They are like the angels in heaven. So the angels in heaven, including the fallen angels, didn't have the ability to procreate. Otherwise, why would man be necessary? They'd simply make more angels.
Mm-hmm.
People don't think that way, but that's really what it comes down to. And in the Mesopotamian myths, man was actually created to work, because the Anunnaki and the Ajiji, the two orders of angels in Mesopotamian cosmology, refused to do the manual labor. They felt it was beneath them, and I guess it really was, because they were divine beings. So man was created from the earth to do work. And I think the Bible echoes that same concept, even though in a different way, theologically similar, but different in other ways.
Yeah, the work didn't come about until after we got kicked out of the garden.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure exactly what work was going on there. Maybe it was after the garden. It's not really clear. The two accounts are not perfectly parallel. But it's a good idea to be well informed of Mesopotamian cosmology, because sometimes it lends interesting insight into the writings of the Bible, because Abraham actually came out of Ur of the Chaldees. And a study of the parallel myths of those two countries reveals that they both probably came from the same root tradition, handed down from Noah, but the Mesopotamians kind of differentiated and started adding their own ideas and changing around the names of the deities until they kind of fell into idolatry. Whereas the Israelites kept the original stuff together.
Yeah, we'll talk about that as we go forward. We're talking to Doug Elwell. He is the publisher of Mysterious World, the author of Mysterious World Ireland, and the website mysteriousworld.com. We're talking about giants and the giants who walked the earth in former days, where they came from, and why we should even care. It's Off-Road Friday on The Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Working without a map. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
It's 5:51 and a Friday afternoon, and of course that means an opportunity to get out for the weekend. If you're looking for something special to do this weekend, whether it's celebrating a victory at work this week, celebrating the Chicago Cubs now reaching 500 on the season, or maybe not. I know that's not something Justin draws any pleasure from, but whatever it is, or maybe it's just looking for just a pleasant, relaxing night out. Let me recommend CC's City Broiler to you. Sharon and I went there last Sunday and got there early, and were treated like we were treated like royalty walking in there. Let me tell you, the friendly service at CC City Broiler is absolutely the best that I've encountered at a sit down restaurant in my adult life. Now, that sounds like an exaggeration, but it's absolutely the truth. Ben was on duty. He was working as the maitre d'. Mike was the server who took care of us. And Chef Greg back in the kitchen made sure that everything that we ordered was absolutely perfect. I had the steak fromage, which is an absolutely marvelous boneless filet with blue cheese on top. Absolutely wonderful. But and the beef scallopini that Sharon had was wonderful on Sunday. It was even excellent when I reheated it on Wednesday, because it was more than Sharon could finish in one sitting. They cook the steaks over a live oak fire. Every steak has an absolutely perfect crust, and they make sure that they grill it exactly to your perfection, to your taste. If seafood is more your speed, the South African rock lobster tail is absolutely delicious. It's got a sweetness to it. And, of course, dipped in the butter, anything dipped in butter is better. But the lobster itself, even without the butter, has a sweet taste to it that is absolutely the best. It's no surprise that CC City Broiler was voted best steak, best seafood, and best service in Columbia by Inside Columbia Magazine. Make sure that you stop by there sometime this weekend, and I guarantee you will have the dinner of your life. It is a truth. Americans invented the steakhouse, but CC City Broiler on South 10th in Columbia has perfected it. 5:53 on Off-Road Friday. We're talking with Doug Elwell. If you've got a question about the giants, whether of the biblical variety or the mythological variety or evidence for giants in the land, we welcome your calls at 874-9390 or 800-529-5572. Doug, very quickly, before we get to the ABC News at the top of the hour here, a caller during the break asked us this question: what constituted a giant during biblical times? When they described Goliath as a giant, was he what, 6'6"? I mean, they were generally of shorter stature in those days. What constituted a giant back in those days?
A giant was basically anyone who was probably 7 feet tall or taller. There was two basic classes of giants. I've been going over, I'm looking over my original writings, which I wrote 3 years ago, and actually 4 years ago in some cases, and it's gotten a little fuzzy. But in the world before the flood, they were divided into two classes: the Nephilim and the Gibberim.
Mm-hmm.
The Gibberim were kind of very large, tall men, but also very strong and wide, kind of like Conan the Barbarian, except maybe 7 or 8 feet tall. Huge guys, very strong, very tough, someone you might see in a wrestling match. And those people, some of those wrestling guys might actually have some giant genes in them. It's possible. So, you know, it
would explain a lot, like, yeah.
Andre the Giant, for example, was a classic example of a giant. He was naturally strong. He never worked out. And he could take on any other guy without any real trouble. But then there was the super giant class, the Nephilim, who in the mythologies were said to be hundreds of feet tall, which is a little bit impractical. But it seems some of the Greek myths have the Titans being upwards of 20 feet tall, which is gigantic. Mm-hmm. And in the Baal myths, Baal, the god of one of the pagan gods of Canaan, worshipped by the Canaanites during their decline, was said to be probably two or three times the size of an average man. And his throne was so huge that a normal man would look like a child sitting on it. So probably you're talking upwards of 20 feet tall for the very tallest ones. But that was the most ancient times when the earliest giants were being created. Probably the taller giants during the time of the conquest period, where Joshua was conquering the land, and later with King David, which would be around 1,000 B.C.,
mm-hmm.
They were probably, I think he was around 9.5 feet tall.
So we're talking Goliath and his brothers.
Yeah, Goliath was around probably an average of 8.5 to 9.5 feet tall. And Goliath had several brothers, some of which had six fingers. So it was very interesting. David's mighty men, he named his men the mighty men, the Gibeon, as kind of a mockery of the giants. And they basically systematically slaughtered the remainder of the giants, which is what the original Israelite invasion failed to do. And that's the reason for that, as we can talk about. People say, isn't that, you know, genocide, is that justifiable? I believe I found the reason why God ordered that, and we can talk about
that. We'll talk about that as we continue our discussion with Doug Elwell. We're talking about giants in the land on Off-Road Friday. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Think responsibly. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Monday afternoon on The Drive, we get back to the regular business of talking politics. We'll talk more about the fairness doctrine and the vote in the U.S. House that appears to have driven a spike through its evil heart. Also have as our guest Todd Burke of Tactical Training Specialties. He's the guy who taught me how to shoot a handgun last weekend and how to do it safely. So we'll talk about what all is involved in learning to operate a handgun safely to qualify for a concealed carry permit, if that's something you'd like to do. I will say this. After going through the course from Todd, I feel a lot better about the training that our police officers receive. And it made me feel good that there are Americans out there ready and willing to exercise their Second Amendment rights. So that's coming up Monday afternoon on The Drive between 5 and 7 on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Joining us now as we continue on Off-Road Friday, it's Doug Elwell. He's the publisher of the website MysteriousWorld.com and the author of Mysterious World Ireland. Doug, welcome. We're talking about giants in the land, and I borrow that phrase from the Bible because a lot of what we know about the giants, a lot of the mythology or the stories seem to stem from those accounts. And we'll get into the significance of those accounts and some of the theological questions about that here as we go through this hour. But as somebody who likes evidence before I commit to believing in something, and I was this way, frankly, about the Bible, looking for archaeological evidence and other reasons why I should accept the words inside the covers as they're written. What about forensic or archaeological evidence for giants? What did you come across in your research for your articles on giants?
I've come across a lot of secondary and pictures of giant skulls, which mean from South America. You can actually visit the Gold Museum, I think it's Peru, where there are literally giant skeletons there right now, of men 8 feet tall with huge hands and huge heads. In some cases, an average person could put their head inside of their mouth. It's enormous. You know, I've never seen them personally, but I've seen pictures and I've heard accounts, and that is a reasonable enough assertion to think that there may be some actual physical evidence. But I cannot actually prove it. That's the problem. The thing about the giants is, and I wrote about this in our second part, Giants in the Earth, Giants of the Americas, that the Smithsonian had actually gone throughout the United States and systematically buried everything they found or destroyed it, including many of the giants that were apparently found throughout the land, particularly in a lot of Indian burial mounds and things like that. And they may have been these may have been the original mound people, because mounds are what are called kurgans in Central Asia, are actually emanated from Central Asia in ancient times and spread throughout the earth, just like the giants were believed to have done. And so these giants were probably a mound-building people. And since America is such a heavily mound-building culture, it makes sense that they were probably buried a lot of these mounds. And some of the accounts that we have from the early settlers finding these giants buried in their mounds when they dug them up to create their farming areas.
So early settlers say as white settlers moved down the Ohio River Valley and across the Appalachians into Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, yeah. Indiana back in the 1810s, 1820s?
Particularly in Ohio, they have a number of written accounts of giant skeletons that they found. And the accounts, the records of Ohio are particularly interesting, particularly around the Serpent Mound, which we also have an article on. Basically found giant skeletons all over the place. But the Smithsonian came in and got it all up and took it away, and no one ever saw or heard of them ever again.
Why would the Smithsonian do that?
if the Smithsonian were run by people who didn't want people to know about these things. My theory is in the story is that it was Freemasons or Freemasonic types who have been around since the beginning and who were themselves possibly the descendants of giants may have systematically covered up their own history so they could continue to hide it. And, of course, you know, knowledge is power. If you have all the knowledge, you have control. So those who have the power and who have the understanding have the control. So a lot of our history, I'm finding, has been not necessarily invented, but has been shallow in character. A lot of the really revealing details have been removed.
So these accounts that we have from settlers, early settlers in Ohio, where were these recorded? Were these newspaper accounts? Were these histories of the counties?
These are in the county archives. I have some stuff, information, on the second article. I myself have not looked this up, but I have. There was a website called Serpent Mound Mysteries, which documented all this stuff
mm-hmm.
and showed some of the original documentation. And before they were taken down, or probably by themselves, I assume, they allowed me to use some of the documentation and the images on the second story. So as far as I know, this stuff is the only place in the Internet, this story is the only place in the Internet that you can actually see some documented images and quotes from these original documents.
Huh. Now, how tall were these giants that were discovered here in the Americas?
They were 8 or 9 feet tall, the classic Gibberim-type giant. Not the super huge kind, but the one that formed the rank and file of the giant armies. If you look in the in our part four of our series about the giants of Europe, Caesar actually encountered an enormous amount of Gaulish and Sumerian giants, and the Romans were nearly exterminated by them.
Really?
Yeah. The Roman accounts, and this is right out of our history. I mean, it's there if you want to see it. The greatest and most terrible of all the giants were the Germani giants, or the ancestors of the Germans. And they swept down from Central Europe and nearly destroyed Rome. In fact, it was later the Visigoth giants under Alaric who eventually finished off Rome during, I think it was sometime during the 5th century A.D., but the first attack of the giants against the Romans came several centuries earlier, possibly a few centuries B.C. And the Germani basically destroyed an entire legion of Romans. They were enormous and extremely fierce fighters. You're talking Conan the Barbarian, except they're all 7-8 feet tall and extremely vicious. They would chain themselves together so they couldn't break ranks, and they would just roll over everyone who came in front of them. And they're also known for using enormous amounts of horses, and also they were particularly fond of chariots long after the Romans stopped using them. And the Romans, if they hadn't developed the use of the phalanx and of the javelin and the bow to use against the giants, they would have eventually been exterminated by them. But they turned the tide. Their technological use of these bows and arrows against which the giants, which often fought naked or very lightly clad,
mm-hmm.
Their thing was they used these two-handed swords and just... It was like going against a lawnmower. You stood no chance. So they had to use a standoff form or use a very heavily armored phalanx, or they used missiles to take out the giants at a distance. Otherwise, the giants would destroy them. And as a result, and I talk about this in part four, the Romans essentially exterminated the majority of the remaining giant peoples, and the rest fled basically to Ireland or far north into Scandinavia, or they entered into the mythologies of those peoples.
Huh. And this is all documented in histories recorded by the Romans themselves.
By the Romans, yeah. It's all there.
They weren't exaggerating this to explain why they lost, were they?
No, because they won after a while. Caesar's conquest of Gaul talks about the giants and how huge they were, and how they had they wore their hair bleached blonde and white, and they wore these torques, what are called torques,
uh-huh.
which are basically a golden necklace with an opening in the front with two weighted balls to keep it from turning around on your neck. You can look up torque on the Internet. It's very easy to find. It's basically a very thick gold necklace with an opening on the front.
Right, yeah,
and
a Celtic thing. The Irish, yes. And the Scots continued this on into like the 4th or 5th century over in Britain.
Exactly, yeah. Right. That's exactly right. And this might explain the reference to the Anakim in the Bible, because the Anakim means people of the necklace. And so my theory is that the Anakim are actually Celtic and Germanic warriors who had come down into Canaan and conquered around that time. And the Assyrian and Babylonian records say the Sumerians did, in fact, have major incursions. The Sumerians being, of course, the descendants of Gomer, the son of the oldest son of Japheth. Gomer is probably also the Gog of the Bible. And Magog, the second son of Japheth, was the Magog. So together, the two oldest sons of Japheth were the two most largest and fiercest, most powerful fighters. They became known as Gog and Magog in the Bible, and our descendants became known as the peoples of Gog and Magog, those peoples who lived in Central Asia and Eastern Europe and Central Europe, and came to be known today to us as the Germans and the Russians, basically. And that's where the ancient enmity between Germans and the Russians, between Gog and Magog, came up. You know, the Russians and the Germans hate each other. They always have, because they were descendants of the two warring brothers, Gog and Magog, the first and second sons of Japheth, the son of Noah. The Japhethites basically populated the northern hemisphere, and Gog and Magog became known as the Germans and the Russians. And Magog had other peoples descended from him, such as some of the French, some of the Italians, and particularly the Irish. The Irish are descended of Magog, as I found out as I did my research for our book, Mysterious World in Ireland. There's a lot of fascinating history, and Irish history corroborates the Bible very clearly and adds a great deal of interesting detail.
It's fascinating stuff, and I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. We're talking to Doug Elwell. He's the author of Mysterious World Ireland, the publisher of the Mysterious World website, mysteriousworld.com. And if you think this is all beyond the realm of possibility, consider that a Roman emperor named Maximinus Thrax, who ruled in 235 A.D., from 235 to 238, according to Roman records, stood 8'6". 8'6". They're out there. Giants in the land, that's the topic for Off-Road Friday. It's The Drive, and you're listening to the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Live, local, and listening to you. The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
And the latest weather is always just two clicks away at TheEagle939.com. You'll see the link right there at the top of the website. So as we go through these exciting days of summer, all the rain we've had the last couple of days and the flash flooding it's caused, you'll find the latest information always right there at TheEagle939.com. It's Off-Road Friday. That means the day that we toss out the usual topics of politics and just the day-to-day life stuff and dive into some of the more, well, esoteric, I guess, is the best word I can come up with, topics of the day. Lines are open if you've got a question for our guest, Doug Elwell, as we talk about giants in the earth, 874-9390 or 800-529-5572. Just wanted to bring up one other detail about the Roman Emperor Maximinus Thrax that mentioned just before the break. He was not actually a Roman. As Doug mentioned, the giants seem to descend from the tribes of Gog and Magog. According to Wikipedia, And I know that's not always the best source, but it's the quickest one. Maximinus Thrax, who stood 8'6", Roman emperor stood 8'6", was in fact born of a Gothic father, a German father, and an Alan mother. The Alans were essentially related to the Russian tribe. So Gog, Magog come together, and Maximinus Thrax, you get a guy who's 8'6", and the soldiers apparently made him emperor because he was the toughest dude in the in the legion. We talked about giants in the Americas. We talked about giants in Europe. You've made reference to the giants of the Old Testament, Doug. And you mentioned a word regarding the theory of a history called diffusionist.
Yeah.
How does this all tie together? How does this all come together in trying to put together history that makes sense?
Well, there are two basic schools. The dominant paradigm right now, since the advent of the Smithsonian, who was one of the primary promoters of this, Smithson was one of the major promoters of isolationism, is that America was never invaded by anyone but Asiatic tribes, period, end of story, in all of history.
Hmm.
But actual archaeology makes it clear that America not only has been invaded by European, but also by Asiatic and African and everyone for thousands of years. It's been a melting pot since the beginning. There's never been a tribe, and there's never been a time when it was isolated. And the contrary and the correct position is what is called the diffusionist approach, which says that not only was America populated by more than just Asiatics, even though it was primarily populated by Asiatics, and they were probably here first. It's been populated by everyone. And the diffusionist position holds that the entire Earth has always been in constant communication. There's never been a continent which has been barren for a very long time, and trade has been going on between the continents of various peoples since the beginning, mostly by the sea. And history and archaeology bears this out. Yet, scientists refuse to give in. I don't know why, and it's one of the things that makes me furious.
I think there's some racial, probably some racial considerations there, some political correctness. Right. We got a caller coming in at 874-9390. It's Bill who's dialing in from on the road. Bill, welcome. You're on the Eagle 93.9 with Doug Elwell.
Well, the only thing I can say is that I thought the Art Bell show started at about midnight.
No. Is that your whole comment? Okay, well, fine.
Disgruntled.
Yeah, that's all right. I realize it's not everyone's cup of tea. After 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock Friday afternoon, frankly, I'm a little tired of worrying about what Nancy Pelosi's got up her sleeve as far as the fairness doctrine is concerned. So
it gets so old after a while.
Let's see him come up with an opposing viewpoint to what we're talking about this afternoon. So the diffusionist viewpoint, then, getting back to point. The giants, then, of the Old Testament, the giants that populated the earth back in the day, would they then be the, your view, the giants who were pulled out of the mounds by the early, say, European farmers of the Ohio Valley in the 1820s, 1840s?
My theory was that in the beginning, basically the fallen angels, Satan, whom I, or probably Azazel and Samyaza, these fallen angels. When the giants were destroyed by the flood, the fallen angels were temporarily buried, but they still had an effect. And occasionally they try to recreate the world as it had been before the flood, and this includes rebreeding the giants. And this happens over and over again. This happened particularly during the time of the Exodus, when the giants, beginning during the time of Abraham, which was referred to as the beginning of the iniquity of the Amorites, in the Bible. And this iniquity came to its fruition during the time of Moses. It was one of the reasons that the Israelites were created as a nation, was to wipe out these giants and the things they created, including possibly a killer disease, which had been around since the beginning. We talked about this. I'm developing a new theory about the time of the Exodus, is that in the beginning, when Adam and Eve ate of the fruit of the garden, they released not only sin, they released what we understand as a virus and all kinds of different technologies which were not meant to be understood. This is what meant by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It was knowledge of technology that could be used for good or for evil. That's what I talked about at the beginning. The knowledge of medicine can be used to help or to harm.
Mm-hmm.
The knowledge of nuclear technology can be used to create energy or cause destruction. Knowledge of good and evil. And one of these things was the release of a powerful nanovirus, which I believe is making its comeback in the form of Morgellons. Are you familiar with Morgellons?
Well, yeah, we had the founders of the Morgellons Foundation, and the exact name escapes me, but the group down in Texas that's devoted to studying and raising awareness of Morgellons disease just a few weeks ago.
Yes.
So, yes,
are you familiar with
familiar with
the disease and what it does?
I think so. Please.
Morgellons is basically a nanovirus. It is an artificially manufactured virus, which has the effect of wiring up the human body with a network of wires, turning it into basically creating a network inside the person, which could be ready for the implantation of a chip, which would provide that chip with power and the ability to transmit and receive radio. And at its most advanced stages, according to the theories that are moving around now, could actually be used to control the human being through this network. And this is what I think was happening during the time of the Exodus. This virus, which had been released at the beginning, has been systematically fought against by God through various means. And it had been re-released during the time of the Exodus. This is what it means when Joshua attacked the land of Canaan. He said, the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said, hold on, we're releasing a virus ahead of you. That's going to greatly weaken the Canaanite peoples, and you'll be able to conquer them more easily. This, I think, they may have been referring to Morgellons, which may be making not an appearance but a comeback. This might be something that occurs every once in a while. And I did some advanced research into Morgellons in preparation for our new series on the Exodus Revelation, and some theories about monatomic gold and that sort of thing. Is this stuff really real? And when I studied the original Hebrew in the Bible, it's a possibility that this sort of thing, ancient technology, what we understand is nanotechnology, may have been around since the beginning.
Wow.
It may have been released. This may have been things that Satan taught to Adam and Eve. It's not just an apple. It's an understanding of advanced technology that they could use in order to survive outside of the will of God. That was the whole point. Satan gave them technology so they could make their own way and be like God, but not without having to follow his rules. That's really what it comes down to. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because that's what we're doing. That's what we've always been doing.
Doug Elwell is our guest. We're talking about giants in the earth, and boy, this conversation taking a turn I didn't expect. We'll continue along this this thread here. Let me add one thing that we've had as a guest on the drive, Dr. Hildegard Staniger, who's done some research into Morgellons and discovered that one of the effects of this is that it appears to create inside the body fibers of a silicone-based fibers that protrude from the body. So are we looking at the creation of a fiber optic network inside the body with Morgellons? Possibly. We'll continue talking about that, how it relates to giants. And Doug Elwell, the publisher of MysteriousWorld.com and the author of Mysterious World Ireland, as our conversation continues next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
This is the show they don't want you to hear. It's Off-Road Friday on the Drive. From the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Derek Gilbert taking you through the afternoon and up until 7 o'clock when Michael Savage takes over. It's Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. He always brings out some great old records for his bumper music on Friday nights. So if nothing else, you'll get some great music starting at 7 o'clock on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Off-Road Friday, as we take the drive down the back roads of the human existence and dive into some questions you normally don't hear, at least not during the daylight hours. On the Eagle 93.9. Yeah, maybe Art Bell and George Norrie tackle some of these questions, but let's face it, after 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock Friday afternoon, let's put aside the cares of the week and scratch your curiosity itch a little bit. Doug Elwell is our guest. He's the publisher of the website MysteriousWorld.com. He's written a four-part article on giants in the earth. I'll put links to those articles in the show notes tonight at the Eagle939.com if you're interested in following up and looking at Doug's documentation for the evidence of the existence of giants. And, Doug, now we had started talking about Morgellons, which is a bizarre disease. We have talked about it here on the Eagle 93.9 a couple of times. There is a group just west of here towards the town of Warsaw, Missouri, that has been really working to raise public awareness and get our government representatives active to motivate the CDC, Centers for Disease Control, to start researching Morgellons. Your theory connects Morgellons to the giants.
Correct. It was one of the technologies that Azazel gave to mankind in order to ostensibly help him. But it was the knowledge of good and evil, i.e. knowledge of technology that can be used for good or evil. So nanotech can be used, according to my theory, and actual reality. It can be used to do great medical help. For example, that you can have nanobots clean out your arteries, or you can create a terrible nanovirus, which could turn the entire world into what is called gray goo. You heard of that probably, right? The theory is that if a nanovirus was released that broke down the human body or all animal life down to its constituent elements, you would literally have a world covered with gray goo. That's a real mainstream theory. That nanotechnology could be used for terrible destruction if it got out of control. This is why God didn't want them to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Because even though that knowledge could be used for good, it could also be used for evil.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted us to rely on him solely. But instead, Adam and Eve said, let's go for it. Let's go for the technology, and we can be like God ourselves. But in the end, they ended up just releasing the harmful stuff, too, and things just flew apart.
Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And there's actually a passage in Revelation 9, which I think this might help describe. In Revelation 9, it says, when the abyss was open, an enormous amount of smoke rose out of it, and out of the smoke, these locusts came down, which were like scorpions. And they couldn't heal the people who had the seal of God, but they could hurt people who did not. And they were able to torture them for 5 months. These Morgellons viruses, these little nanobots, which I call nanoserpents, because they look like serpents underneath their skin. And they weave these little fibers throughout your entire body. I've done some advanced research. If you go to Morgellons.org or the boards, you'll see exactly the same thing. They have pictures of people with literally networks of fibers under their skin, which look like spin networks, just like the Internet.
And bizarre colors, you know, coming out blue and red.
Red and blue.
Yeah.
Just like positive and negative. That's what they do. And they have one called golden heads, which apparently literally have a gold head at their tip. And they're blue fibers with gold heads. These can be used to transmit electricity. Other types have crystal inside them, which can be used theoretically to transmit and receive radio signals, because the very first radio sets were crystal sets. You can actually make a crystal radio kit.
Mm-hmm.
You go to like Radio Shack or something like that. You could probably buy a crystal radio kit and create your own radio for free. It won't be very strong, but crystals, according to the theory, you know, the edgy blog stuff that I read, and I was doing some parallel research into the electrical concepts behind the Exodus, based on the theory that Moses and the Egyptians understood electricity, and this explains some of the miraculous events.
So how does this? So Doug, then how does the Exodus and the actions of the Israelites regarding the conquest of Canaan? How does that all tie together bring it home here. Close
okay,
the
well,
circle.
Okay, Morgellons is basically one of the things that wasn't the giants. Along with the giants comes the disease, apparently. And my theory is that the giants could be used to control them somehow. It's just a theory, but basically, I was trying to understand Revelation 9, how it said during that time, the terrible sting of the scorpion, they will seek death, but they will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them. How can it elude them unless they had lost control of their own bodies somehow? Theoretically, these scorpions somehow control the body. That's why I said, you know, I thought maybe the chip that could control your body and have like a fail-safe to keep you from killing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a preset network of fibers in your body that could allow a chip to send signals to your body to keep you from doing certain things, that could explain why these people are not allowed to kill themselves.
Well, you know, and this sounds like it's way out there, but the fact is that mainstream news sources have been reporting now for the last year or so, research going on at DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Administration for the U.S. government, the Australian military also doing research on implanting chips into soldiers to create super soldiers.
It's happening now, and the theory of this it sounds wacko, but it can be done. All you have to do is set up a nanobot to say, okay, find a human host or an animal,
mm-hmm.
and when you're inside a certain person of certain temperature, start creating these fibers, and these other fibers will have to, you know, match with other fibers. That's what nanobots do. They create stuff automatically. They're creating nanobots to, like I said before, clean out the arteries and the cholesterol out of your arteries, to repair stuff inside your body. Why not to create a network of fibers? It's completely reasonable. If you just have to, first of all, you have to have an open mind, and second of all, you have to have an understanding of technology, and that's what I'm promoting. The only thing, the only major roadblock to this theory, how it relates to the giants, is am I capable of being open-minded to believe that technology of this type existed before, say, the 1990s?
Yeah.
That's really the major hurdle you have to overcome. And I think some people in the community, the Art Bell community, as your previous caller called it, that type of person who's open-minded and is interested in finding the truth, it's capable of understanding it. And that's the kind of person I'm interested in talking to. Really everyone, but those are the kind of people who are really interested in finding the truth. And more ancient technology seems to be surfacing. And Book of Enoch says mankind was given technology,
mm-hmm.
and technology of all kinds, and it doesn't say how much or how little. And the world before the flood, as far as we know, could have been just as advanced as we are now. In fact, Jesus himself said, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And if these are indeed the days of the coming of the Son of Man, you can backwards extrapolate.
Well,
you know,
yeah. I mean,
and say, well, probably apparently they had technology back then, too.
Yeah, he's not here yet, and technology is far advanced beyond what we thought existed before the flood.
But it really comes down to having an open mind about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Am I willing to be open-minded, break out of the paradigm of work, sleep, eat, die, or am I just going to just stay with the blinders on and do nothing but work and watch TV till I reach 70 and that's it.
Well,
a lot of people do that, and they want to do that. It's like the Matrix kind of concept.
Right.
I don't want to hear the truth. It causes me a problem. It causes me distress. So I'm not going to listen. So I'm going to call up the radio station and say, this is Art Bell stuff.
which is
what they want to do. That's fine, yeah. But I think it's a bad idea.
It's Doug Elwell that we're talking with on the Eagle 93.9, Giants of the Earth. We somehow morphed into talking about Morgellons disease, but there's a connection there.
We do try to
encourage thinking here. We don't necessarily agree about with everything that we hear or that we discuss here on this program, but the bottom line is think, look, research, consider the evidence, and then make up your own mind. Don't let me or anyone else tell you what to think. Don't let television tell you what to think, but for goodness sake, don't just tune stuff out because it doesn't fit into the accepted worldview that's presented to you by the talking news heads on cable news every night. Getting back, Doug, to the Giants in the Americas, the Serpent Mound, Cahokia Mounds. Cahokia, of course, not far from here, just across the river from St. Louis, not far actually from where you're at, maybe 5-6 hours. We really don't know why the mound builders built what they did. We've got the reports from the settlers who migrated into the territories previously occupied by the Native Americans, the white settlers that came down the Ohio River and moved into the area in the 1800s, finding skeletons 9 feet tall and larger. Do we have any stories that have been preserved by the tribes of dealings and interactions with giants?
There are quite a few Native American legends about giants, particularly red-headed and blonde giants.
Red-headed and blonde?
Yeah. Regularly, in one myth, there's a red-headed giantess called Pretty Woman, who is exceptionally beautiful but also very tall and powerful. They used to, what they would do is the giants would place a game, kind of like Hi-Li, with the native tribes, and if the Native American tribes won, the giants would leave them alone and maybe give them some gold or something. But if the giants won, they would eat the Native American tribes. And once again, this is actual mythology. And the Pretty Woman was one of these. Eventually, the giants were defeated by a Native American hero called Red Horn, who defeated the giants. And there's actually a Native American story called Red Horn Defeats the Giants. But there's many other ones. There's one example of giants in the legends of the Native Americans. And they talked about how the giants, their heads were full of wampum and their hearts were filled with ice. And what that meant was, actually, their heads were full of shells and their hearts were full of ice.
Mm-hmm.
And shells was another word for wampum. It's something they used to trade. In other words, all the giants cared about was money. And they had what we understand as cold hearts. So they were cold-hearted and greedy. And they were also cannibals. But the hero, Redhorn, I forget what tribe that he was from, convinced the giants to stop being greedy and cannibalistic and just cold-hearted. And in the myth, it was said that they vomited out the ice from their hearts, and from thereafter they were no longer cannibals. So these people could be reformed if they were taught to be good. But like you say, the Native American myths are in fact full of legends of giants, particularly redheads and blondes. And in fact, in Newfoundland, there are some Native Americans, among whom there are some very tall, blonde people. And it's in the Native American genome. This is all a matter of science. There's nothing except for the theory about the Morgellons, but the fact about Morgellons is that's science.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with the genetics. Recently, a study was taken of the mitochondrial DNA of Native Americans before the time of Columbus. So they dug up the bones and found mitochondrial DNA in the marrow, and they tested it to see what were the Native Americans actually made up of. And they found that they were indeed 96% Asiatic, but also 4% Caucasian.
This is before Columbus.
This is as scientific as you can possibly get, and scientists don't want to recognize the fact that Caucasians were in the Americas and intermarrying with Native Americans since the most ancient times. This is where the giant myths come from. Basically, they're probably Viking types who are very tall and very strong, maybe even giants in some cases. They probably only remembered really the giants. But settlers from Ireland have been coming since the time of Brendan, which was probably, I think it was...
900, I think, wasn't it?
Well, maybe it was a little later. I could look that up. I've forgotten. But,
well, and the Welsh remember Prince Madoc, who came over in the 12th century.
And the Welsh and right. Irish monks have been coming over, and there's all kinds of Ogham all over the East Coast.
Right.
Inscriptions. And it's just, it's mind-boggling. Why do these people not want to see this? The Native American legends are full of Caucasians. Their DNA is literally... contains Caucasian DNA. It just doesn't get any simpler.
Again, politically incorrect. Doug Elwell is our guest. He's the author of Mysterious World Ireland and the publisher of the MysteriousWorld.com website, the Mysterious World e-zine. Our final segment as we discuss giants in the land on Off-Road Friday here on The Drive, next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Boldly going where no talk show has gone before. This is Off-Road Friday on The Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Derek Gilbert talking with our guest Doug Elwell, the publisher of MysteriousWorld.com, the author of Mysterious World Ireland. Wide-ranging conversation today, Doug. Started with fallen angels, procreating with human women, creating giants that spread across the earth, and winding up at Morgellons disease. where do you go from here?
Well, we could go talk briefly about the procreation with women. I never answered the original question, how do they do it? And I think the modern UFO phenomenon gives us the answer, because they don't have procreation. What they have is a kind of a lab environment where they modify the human gene, the human eggs and sperm or whatever, in order to create these hybrid creatures. And that's probably how they did it. Since they aren't able to procreate, they probably use their technology and understanding of science in order to create modified humans, which we know as giants. And that's why I call the giants, I gave them a scientific term, I call them Homo artificialis, which means artificially manufactured men, because they have been created they're modified men rather than originally created. Men who had been in the mythologies, and this is how the mythologies say, men were crossbred somehow with animals. And you can't do that, of course, because it won't work.
But we talk about this today with the embryonic stem cell research phenomenon. I mean, our scientists in the UK are demanding that the government give them the permission to blend human DNA with animal DNA for research.
And if it's talked about, it's happening. You've heard of the spider goat. That's a classic example. But did you know Stalin was trying to create super warriors by crossing apes with humans? So they create exceptionally strong humans that were easily controlled and stupid. Stalin wanted to do this. He actually tried to do this. It's one of those weird unknown stories that you only hear about 50 years later. But, of course, they did it in a laboratory, naturally. But this is the point. He tried it. The concept was there, and they tried to do it. It didn't work, but they could do it now by splicing genes. And that's the point. You can do it now by splicing genes. In fact, it's entirely possible that someone somewhere has done this. This is kind of the concept behind The Boys of Brazil, that movie.
Right.
He was literally experimenting with the people in Brazil. They had this South American child with blue eyes, you know, that sort of thing. It can be done. It's theoretically possible. And if it can be done, it will be done.
Well, boy, we just went full circle here. This is sort of like the unified field conspiracy theory.
I'll be down in, and like you mentioned, Roswell. There's a big Roswell conference.
Sure, it's the 60th anniversary of the Roswell crash coming up next week.
The 5th through 9th, and it's going to be a huge deal. All the major players are going to be there. I'm actually going to be there as press, doing research for a series of articles on Roswell as a tourist destination. We'll be doing in 2008, along with our series on Route 66 as a kind of mysterious travel destination, which has a lot of interesting mainstream history, too.
And so
they'll be put together.
All of this and information about your book, Mysterious World Ireland, all available at MysteriousWorld.com.
Yes, and you can buy the book at Amazon.com. Just type in Mysterious World Ireland.
Doug Elwell, our guest, the publisher of Mysterious World Electronic Magazine, MysteriousWorld.com. Doug, thanks for your time this afternoon. It's been fascinating.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. We look forward to being back Monday with Todd Burke. Michael Savage takes over next with the Savage Nation on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.